Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And welcome, everyone, to MotorWeek podcast number 65. I am John Davis, and joining me around our table in Studio C today are Road Test producer and two-wheeling reporter Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
And our assistant producer and chief Road Test honcho, Ben Davis.
Let's do it.
Okay, we've got a couple of topics to get through today, including our lightning round and our mailbag, but we really want to make this a show where we talk about our once-a-year event of awarding our Driver's Choice Awards. For 2012, we have a list of 15 categories that we presented awards to at the recent Chicago Auto Show. So we're going to kind of go down the list. The reason we pick so many awards, and we pick one in lots of different categories, is we like to give car buyers a narrower view and a narrower choice of a model in each category. I'm probably saying it wrong. We want to make it a broader choice, but we want to give you a specific vehicle for lots of different categories that you actually buy vehicles for.
Yeah, you can't compare a luxury car and a performance car and say this one's better because
they're not the same. They're not the same. And that's something that an awful lot of the awards out there do. And so we try and make it a little easier for the consumers. And with that, let's get right into it. And Brian, I'll let you have first crack. Our best subcompact of the year. I will say that we took our best small car award this year and divided into best subcompact and best compact because there were just so many small good cars out this year. So best subcompact went to the duo of the Kia Rio and the Hyundai Accent.
Yeah, it was a lot of cars in the subcompact and compact category, so it was interesting.
That was tough.
Yeah,
the
Fiat 500 was new, new Beetle, a lot of new things.
Chevy Sonic.
But the Rio stood out for just its overall balance of great looks, good handling, well-thought-out interior, and just everyday comfort. It's not the cheapest in the category, as you think a Kia might be, but it's still a good price.
It's a little sportier than the Hyundai Accent, and the Accent kind of got the nod because it's a little more mass marketed, and obviously the two cars are very similar mechanically.
Styling as well, yep, for the Accent.
Absolutely. The Rio, it felt big on the inside, and as far as I felt it was the smoothest and quietest out of the bunch. I mean, exterior-wise in the subcompact category, they all kind of look the same, so there's not a whole lot you can go off there, but yeah, the Rio just felt bigger than it was.
I think this one, our best compact car choice, will be a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people. This is the new generation Subaru Impreza. It's already doing quite well. It's pushed January sales for Subaru to a record January. Why did we pick it?
All-wheel drive.
Yeah, all-wheel drive is part of it.
Standard.
The Impreza has never really lived up to its potential. To me, the base Impreza, you know, the WRX was nice and STI was great, but the base Impreza was just a really boring snoozer of a car. And they've changed that. The base Impreza, it looks great. It drives great. It's comfortable, all-wheel drive. Interior is really nice.
Yeah. Well equipped for like a little less than 19,000.
And they cracked up the miles per gallon a little higher too, so.
Actually, quite a bit higher. Yeah. You're right about that. They went with a smaller engine. It's down to 2 liters from 2.5. They put lightweight materials in it, and I mean lightweight to save weight. And did a very, very good job. And you guys also, I know particularly you were commenting about how much improved the steering feel is.
Absolutely. I mean, in an era where a lot of people are, a lot of manufacturers are decontenting to lower their production costs, Subaru is one of the few that's actually improving their product.
Best family sedan. Here's a situation where we got another Korean duo, the Hyundai Sonata and the Kia Optima. The Sonata we also picked last year, and this year we've added the Kia Optima to it for a lot of the same reasons that we had the duo for the best subcompact.
Yeah, the Sonata was a great-looking, great overall package last year, and like you say, the Optima kind of continues that. I think it looks even better, the Optima. Not as kind of swoopy, a little more aggressive-looking, sporty-looking.
More European.
Yeah, especially
absolutely.
The interior.
Absolutely.
I really like the interior. I like the interior of both cars, but the Optima interior was very warm and made you feel like it was a driver's car.
Had that old European feel. It kind of reminds me of an older Saab, like an 80s Saab. I don't know why.
That's actually when you think about the shape of the dash.
Yeah,
sort of driver centric.
Yeah, early three series, right. Maybe 83 series.
Yeah, and both the Sonata and the Altima, both you can get basic four cylinder, you can get a turbo, you can get a hybrid. So
lots of choices.
Options.
Yeah. Best minivan, repeat winner, Honda Odyssey.
That thing is a beast.
It's a great car. It's great for long-distance travel. It's extremely comfortable. It doesn't have the fold-in-the-floor rear seats like the Chrysler vans do. But even with the arrival of the new Nissan van and the Toyota van in the last year or so, I don't think the Odyssey still came out on top pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, just put a couple thousand miles on it the week before last. Just great, comfortable car for eating up highway miles. Long range.
Yeah.
Fuel economy of any minivan.
Yeah. I think we drove from Savannah, Georgia to Richmond, Virginia before we needed to stop for fuel.
Yeah, so, and that's a long
trip. Over 500 miles. Yeah.
Best convertible. Chevrolet Camaro convertible. Certainly one of the best looking convertibles out there.
It's got the retro style, but it doesn't look dated. It's still looking pretty good, at least to me. You can get V6, V8. Both of them have good power for the class and comfortable.
And go ahead.
Oh, it just screams America to me, so I'm all for it.
It's interesting. We have mixed feelings sometimes about the Camaro coupe, largely because of short side glass, and it's not the easiest car to see out of. True, you have sort of the same situation with the convertible, but just being able to put that top down makes it feel like a much different car to me. I mean, it now has two personalities. It's not just performance. It's also a bit of a show off.
Puts a little more sophisticated look to it.
Yeah, it does.
And as long as this car's been around, it still turns. And you see them all over the place, but people still turn their heads.
Still,
when they see
take
them.
A look at them.
It's pretty wild.
Best luxury sedan was a repeat, Infiniti M, a very impressive car, but we made it a repeat winner for one specific reason.
It's just so much fun to drive.
And the new hybrid.
Batteries.
I can't ever – I think it was the first hybrid I can recall being at 65 miles an hour on an interstate and being able to maintain that speed with the gas engine shut down, on level
just
road.
Cruising on electric. Yeah, it's amazing. And it's so smooth. You never even know when you're electric, gas, whatever. It's incredibly smooth.
It's got brutal power when you need it too, though.
It does.
When you still want to have fun.
And, fuel economy on long trips well into the 30s for a car that size. Plus, like you point out, being able to do what a luxury sports sedan should do, which is handle corners really well. Very impressive.
Great interior as well.
Best sports sedan, Volkswagen Jetta GLI.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get grief about this one or not.
I'm sure we should. I'm sure we
will. Why?
When I first drove it, I told somebody, I came around, I'm like, this is as close as you can get to being a 3 Series without being one, and it's front-wheel drive on top of that. I'm not sure how they did it. And everyone that's been in it has agreed. I mean, it's a great handling car.
It's got a great exhaust note, and the intake has got a heavy draw to it when you're on the pedal, and it just adds to the whole – and the shifter was great. It just adds to the whole driving experience.
But would you have believed, I mean, we know that the difference between a solid rear axle, a beam axle, and an independent is a big deal. Mm-hmm. But when that's basically what you do to the car, add that independent rear end to a car that we liked originally, but certainly was not considered the sportiest sedan out there, it's an amazing transformation, I think.
It's a whole different car. And the interior is much sportier. It looks great.
That's a fun one to drive, definitely.
Best sport coupe. This, again, is another repeat. And it's interesting because there's been other new sport coupes in the last couple of years. Cadillac CTS coupe, either in the regular variety or this super hot V.
Yeah, I was surprised by this one because the Mini Cooper coupe we had in was extremely fun. And, new Mercedes C-Class coupe.
There's a lot of good contenders.
Yeah, but the Cadillac CTS, man, it just does everything well. I mean, the interior is over the top. It's comfortable. It looks great.
And you can get it in V designation.
Yeah, the V has got of all the tweaking by factory performance cars that an American manufacturer has made, I don't think anything has been as good as the V series from Cadillac so far, or at least in the CTS V.
Yeah, big amounts of power, and they look virtually not very little different from the base coupes.
And, excellent reliability. And if you're ginger on the pedal, you can you can be all right as far as that goes, too.
Now, you can tell we love performance cars because we actually have not only a best sport coupe category, but we also have a best performance car category, which in most years has been sort of traditional American performance, and it is again this year. Might not be a surprise to folks that it goes to a Ford Mustang, but it's not just any Mustang. It's the Ford Mustang Boss 302. Why, guys?
Well, talk about incredible differences between the Boss 302 and any other Mustang that you can get. They just took the Mustang and did everything that you would want to do to it. The shifter feel is that much more incredible. The sound is that much more incredible. The all-around driving package is the car is just sorted out perfectly.
Yeah, this category, we tend to look at, you know, bang for the buck performance more so than outright performance. And the Boss 302, I mean, I can't think of a better bang for your buck. I mean, it's 444 horse out of the 5-liter V8. It sounds awesome. It feels awesome. It's just everything is perfect about it.
If it had a European badge on it, you'd pay twice the amount of money, and right. You'd still think you'd be getting a good deal.
You know, you both really hit on it. The balance, though, I mean, there almost every time when any car you find some aspect of performance that takes a backseat to something else, there was nothing about that car that was a trade-off. It handled well. It rode well. It steered well. It broke well. It accelerated well. Everything seemed to work. All the systems seemed to work with each other with precision. And I don't know if they just got lucky or what, but it was one heck of a job.
I was glad to see it wasn't just a carryover name.
They really did the job. Excuse me, best small utility. Now, this is a new one. A lot of people have not seen the new Mazda CX-5. This is a complete replacement for the Tribute, which, of course, was basically a Ford Escape. Mazda is a separate company and not connected with Ford anymore, although I'm sure the CX-5 shares some semblance with the new Escape, even though they claim it doesn't. But a nice, very attractive-looking utility with some high-tech hardware under the hood.
Yeah, then the whole SkyActiv fuel economy way they go about things is pretty neat. But I think, really, it just came down to style, and it looks amazing. And gets best fuel economy in class, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
And it handles like you've come to expect the Mazda to handle.
Yeah. And they're going to do a diesel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you can get it all-wheel drive, two-wheel drive. And they keep a focus on driver excitement.
In a year where the new CR-V came out, this is pretty significant. A lot of people thought it was going to walk away with most of the prizes. But the CX-5 from Mazda seems to take that compact crossover and push it up another level.
Oh, yeah, especially for us as drivers. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a lot more exciting than the CR-V.
Best large utility. This is the second year for this duet, Jeep Grand Cherokee and Dodge Durango. Grand Cherokee for 5-passenger. Dodge Durango for 7, both can tow about 7,400 pounds, and that takes the big V8. But I got to tell you, I prefer the standard Pentastar V6.
Pentastar does a good job, especially with fuel economy. There wasn't a whole lot in the full-size SUV category this year, but it's been a while since I'd been in the Cherokee, and I recently just got back into it, and incredibly comfortable. Everything about it is just well put together.
Yeah, super sophisticated, too, with all their transfer case technologies and settings and stuff like
pretty
that.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, there's a lot of smart guests.
It's no wonder that's the Grand Cherokee and the Durango, but really the Grand Cherokee, if you look at the new Chrysler sales numbers, they're a big part of what's going
it's
on
stunning,
there.
Good design, too. Stunning from the outside.
Best pickup truck, Ford F-150. Ford F-150 is certainly no stranger to getting awards, but it has sort of put the world on its ear this year, not with a V8, but with a V6.
Absolutely.
The EcoBoost Twin Turbo 6, that plus their standard 6, now make up over 60% of the production of the F-150. They are selling more 6s than 8s. I don't think that's happened in my lifetime.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't have called that one.
And they're selling like hotcakes, and people like them, and they're getting great fuel economy. Best eco-friendly, the Toyota Prius family. So somebody, one of you give us an update on what's going on there. Why is it called a family now?
Well, you can get – I just came back from driving the city version, the Prius C.
That's the newest one.
Yeah. It's called a family just because there's so many variations of it. If you need the extra room to tote around more things, you can get the Prius V. If you just need a little city hopper with great fuel economy and you need that tight parking ability and stuff, go for the C. Then you got the original Prius.
And the plug-in coming?
Yeah. I mean, it's a Prius for all your needs.
Yeah, with all the hybrids out there, they still get better fuel economy than any of them out there, and they still outsell them all. And it's pretty much what everyone thinks of when you say hybrid.
I was out in San Diego, and that's all you saw was Priuses at the stoplight. I was
really
that's all there was.
Give us a quick synopsis of what it was like to drive the C. Was it as competent as most subcompacts?
Yeah, I mean, the gone is the power mode button. They have an eco button. And the power button's gone. But I'll tell you, for only 99 horsepower, I never felt like I needed or I wanted more horsepower. It has plenty of power for the miles per gallon you're pulling down. It's incredible.
Is 53 miles per gallon in the city the highest miles per gallon in the city of any vehicle?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, we're all going to win the lottery this week, right? And if we do, we all get to go out and pick one of our dream machines. And we have a trio this year, as we usually do, because we can't make up our minds about one. We'll start off with the Ferrari 458 Italia. Does it really need any explanation?
Yeah, chances are if we drove a Ferrari that year, it will be one of our dream machines. Everything about that any Ferrari carries over, just the sound, the whole experience, the smell, everything about it, just exotic and awesome.
Just for the smell of it.
But, you know, there's a more fundamental reason than that. I mean, I got asked just the other day, well, you know, what are some of these supercars like to drive, a Lamborghini, and why is that better than a Ferrari? And I think I had to stop and say, okay, a Ferrari just seems, and I don't mean the word mature in a bad way, but it's a more matured engineering piece. It is a car that actually functions like a car. It doesn't function like a piece of art. It may be a piece of art, but it functions like a car now. They didn't always do that. But ever since the Enzo, they've been producing cars that you could literally drive every day and feel very confident in and very comfortable, and you don't have to have your legs scrunched up in your face like you do with some exotics, yet it is an exotic car. And it does all the things that an exotic car should do well, like, you know, go fast and take corners and cost a lot of money to insure.
I'd be scared to park it anywhere.
Much more insurance probably than your house cost. The next dream machine, two versions, a Mercedes-Benz SLS AMG, both the coupe and the roadster.
Yeah, I mean, last year when they came out with the coupe, I mean, the Gullwing coupe, it was an amazing job. I thought they did. I didn't think they could actually pull that off and be as nice as it did, but I liked it a lot. And the Roadster we just sat in not too long ago, still great on track, old school Roadster feel, fun.
Definitely a gentleman's car. Brutal performance and just elegant inside.
That
as well.
Long nose and short rear deck, it just.
I think it's the gentleman's Viper.
Yeah, I think you're right. The last one, some people have criticized this third choice as well. You know, you don't have to have a King's Ransom to buy a Porsche 911. But how could you not put that car, the new 911, as one of the dream machines?
Well, I kind of was one of the arguing in that way. Just a base 911 is not necessarily something that I dream about. But having said that, all new generation 911s are rare, and this it is very nice. It's a lot more electronics creeping in. But extremely well put together, bolted down on the track, handles awesome, good power. Everything we've come to know and love from the 911, taken to another level.
Now, you both just came back from driving it at Roebling at our road course down there. Ben, your experience in it?
It was my favorite car to drive out of all of them. It was the one you could push the hardest and not worry about stepping out of line. And, I mean, I believe it is a dream machine, but the reason that there is a little question about it is because it's one of the dream machines that it's not hard to see on a daily basis
right.
versus the others. But that, I mean, it shouldn't make it any less of a dream for anybody to
Now, we had the S down at Roebling.
Sure, S, so, yeah.
So, but it... unlike some of the other high-end performance cars that have been icons that keep getting bigger and losing a little of their personality, I thought the 911 had lost none of its personality.
Yeah, I think it might even gained a little back from the last generation. And you mentioned being down at Roebling doing our testing. We had someone there drive the car who actually used to work for Porsche drive the vehicle. And I asked him after he got out what he felt about the electric steering. Because there, some articles have really pointed out that it's not as good as it could be. But yeah, he couldn't even tell that the vehicle had electronic steering. He was not.
Since the first couple of electronic steering modern ones came into play, I think they've managed to tune them very well. And I thought I couldn't tell the difference. Yeah. Okay, that is our 2012 Motor Week Driver's Choice Awards. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for giving everybody your thoughts on the rundown.
Are we going to go best of the year out of all those?
Oh, we are. Don't let me forget the one, the top. Now, all right, let me explain.
Tune in next time when we tell you our best
of
the year.
No, I wasn't going to wrap things up completely, but thank you, Brian.
Meanwhile.
How could I forget our best of the year? Here's how this goes. Once you win one of our categories, then you're eligible to get best of the year. And since you brought it up, why don't you tell everybody what best of the year is?
Ford Mustang Boss 302 for all the reasons that we've already mentioned.
It's just about the most perfect road car we've seen in ages.
Yeah, and, you know, I've talked to some Mustang guys, and they're all like, well, the GT500 has more horsepower, and it's not that much more. But the Shelby, you know, nothing does it all perfect like the Boss 302. It just does everything well.
I agree. It's one of those cars that you're going to see at auction 20 years from now and still be bringing tons of money.
So Motor Week's best of the year, lest John not forget it, the Ford Mustang Boss 302, also our best performance car, and it deserves all the accolades it can get.
Yeah, you got to drive it to fully appreciate it.
Now, you can obviously tell that I'm ready to move on to the lightning round. Okay, here's the deal. We have 2 minutes to sort of debate this question, and when our producer Michelle Parker rings the bell, that means the time is up. Here we go, and it's a fun question this time. I think just about everybody on the planet either saw the Super Bowl or some of the car ads for the Super Bowl. So here we go. Which automaker's Super Bowl ads were your favorite? Do you think the ultra-expensive commercials really sell cars? Well, let's do the first part first. What's your favorite, Ben?
I like the Kia Optima commercial where the Dream Fairy accidentally spilled his bucket on the guy's head, and all of a sudden he's racing down a track, and Motley Crue, just enough Motley Crue is in the background. I love Motley Crue, but that was perfect.
No kidding.
And then the two guys sawing on the monster sandwich. Yeah. I think I loved it so much because that's exactly what my dream would be like. I'm a big lunch hunter.
I agree. That was my favorite as well. It was kind of disappointing because I'd seen most of them already. There was, you know, everyone tried to build their buzz by getting them out there early, which I'm not sure that was such a great idea. But that was good. The Acura one was really good.
Yeah, and I like the Acura one. I also like the Matthew Broderick CRV spot.
That was great.
What was the Kia spot with they were using the car like a defibrillator?
Oh, yeah. Well, was it Kia or Hyundai?
That was Hyundai.
Yeah,
Hyundai. That's the problem with some of these spots. They're funny, but you don't remember the car.
Now, that one was pretty clever. I mean, it wasn't anything really great, but it was very clever.
It was clever. Yeah. Now, do they sell cars? I guess we should. What did you think about the Chrysler spot?
The Clint Eastwood
spot. Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, that was phenomenal.
It was good. I thought it was really well written, and obviously his delivery was good, and it was a good message. Yeah.
That's not going to sell cars, and I think it wasn't intended to sell a specific car anyway, but it certainly struck a lot of chords about America in general and the emotion. So that brings us to that second part. Do these spots sell cars? Would you buy a car based on that spot on any of these?
Well, certainly not, but they do, you know, they make a buzz, which I think it's debatable whether that sells vehicles or not, but I think that's what every manufacturer is looking for, is just to have a buzz about their brand.
Well, I know the morning after the game, almost everybody was talking about them.
Yeah, man, they'll be talking about them for days, too. Mm-hmm.
I guess the spots are up to around, $3.5 million now. there was apparently BMW, the Northeast dealers of the BMW, got together and bought some of the local spots around the show. And they have found a way to create a lot of buzz in their region about vehicles without spending the kind of bucks you need to go nationally. So, and if they're willing to do that, there's obviously you know, a lot to this. I worry about the spots being seen so far ahead of time on YouTube and stuff, but certainly didn't seem to cut down the buzz. Yeah. In fact, it probably accentuated it.
It seemed more car-centric this year. It did. Less website-y type stuff and a lot more car stuff.
Okay, let's move on now to our Motor Week mailbag. This question comes from Mike. Okay, Mike, it's a long question, so here we go. I'm going to read this as best I can. I've always been a fan of the older muscle cars from the 60s and 70s, yet now the base Mustang with the V6 will outrun probably 90% of the supercars from the golden era. And you're right, Mike. It occurs to me that driving a 1970 model car today would be like driving a 1929 model in 1970. All things considered, safety, technology, performance, would a 1970 model be closer to new models or the 1929 models? In other words, he's primarily saying, is there a bigger difference between 29 and 70 than there is between 70 and today?
Definitely huge. Bigger difference between 29 and 70, for sure.
You know, it's even if you just look at one area, brakes.
Seat belts,
brakes, safety.
Safety glass.
I mean, a lot of those 60 era cars still had drum brakes in the front.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, a lot can be done relatively cheaply, though. And we talked about brakes and suspension. I mean, just about any muscle car, you can get upgraded brakes and suspension that'll almost get you to modern car standards without spending a whole lot of money.
And tires.
Tires, oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're talking about bias ply tires now versus some of the best radials. If there would be one area that would be a little more difficult to upgrade, it would probably be steering, because most of those used ball-type steering. But I imagine there's probably fixes for that, too.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of stuff out there.
Well, and if you're comparing 70s models to current models, safety would be the hardest to
virtually impossible to do.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to replicate
crushable
that kind of safety.
Frames. Yeah, and believe me, all of that stuff really makes a huge difference.
As you get older, it certainly does. Yeah.
So, Mike, I hope that answers your question. A 1929 vehicle, for the most part, not only does it not have any of the safety accoutrements, but I think you would be amazed how little space there is on the inside of them. They needed so much for structure and engine that the occupants were almost an afterthought in some of those cars. And that does bring to a close our Motor Week podcast number 66, produced in Studio C here at 66. Motor Week headquarters. I want to thank our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, for always doing his masterful job of making us sound intelligent, our podcast creator, Bob Mixer, and our producer, Michelle Parker, who does all the work beforehand and makes sure that we stay on script, more or less, with or without her bell. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Be sure to watch Motor Week on your local public television stations. Also, you'll see us on the cable channel Velocity. Till next time, keep on watching Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by rockauto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.